everyone, and welcome to the 223rd episode of Rainier Free Nintendo. But alas, this is going to be quite a different episode because our preparations were a little bit snake bit, I dare say. Johnny couldn't join us because after a decade-long college career, he is actually graduating. And John had to drop out very suddenly. So we are down two men from our usual crew. But joining me as usual, although very much under the weather, is Mr. James Jones.
Literally and figuratively under the weather, actually.
Yes, indeed. Coming in to sub for the guys, first of all, we have the newscast's Nathan Mustafa.
Howdy. I am glad to be here.
Good to have you back on. And returning champion from planning and helping us with the live special, once upon a time, RFN host, Carl Castaneda.
103 episode part two, right? Come on, guys.
Yes. I have this weird intuition it's not going to be quite like that.
You might be right.
You could just see the newscast if you want that on a bi-weekly basis.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to be on the next episode of the newscast, so listen
you
to that.
You are.
Premonition.
Coming up in this episode, we're going to have a couple of bits of listener mail to get to, and then sort of in honour of Carl being here, we're going to do a special feature on the Wii report card for this year and the entire life cycle. If long-time listeners might remember that back in 2007, on my first appearance on RFN, Carl took us through a little review of the Wii's life to date, which was just 1 year at the time, and we kind of bringing that back for this year. Obviously a lot of stuff has happened in between. Should be interesting to compare what's changed. So that's going to be at the tail end of the show, but we will kick off as usual with new business. And Nathan, you will begin.
I will. So I've been playing a couple things, none of them very much thanks to finals, but the first of those is Infinity Blade on the iPad. So have any of you heard of that?
Well, I know of it because it's by Chair, the people that make Shadow Complex, yes.
It is. They did a great job with this game as well. I didn't know it was coming from Chair. I just thought it used the Unreal tech. And yeah, I wasn't surprised to see it was them because it's a great game. It's like a medieval Punch-Out. That instead of using a brawling system, you swipe the screen directionally to use your sword. And so you're, you know, pulling off parries and dodges and blocks with your shield.
Well, that was one of the first things that kind of raised my eyebrows about this. First of all, I suppose it's very technically impressive that they got this Unreal 3.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
Running on the iOS.
Outside of any gameplay features, the game looks outstanding.
But I was curious to hear that it's kind of, you got that kind of pattern recognition element to it, like
yes.
A Punch-Out, as you mentioned, with that kind of, you know, touchscreen interface on an iPhone or whatever. I mean, how well does that work?
It works pretty well. It gives you enough of a window so that you can actually make your parries, but it's not outrageous. You know, it's still a very timing-centric game, and you have to memorize those. You don't have to memorize the patterns, but it helps that within the course of a fight, you learn their tells.
And you can anticipate.
Yeah. You have a pretty substantial health bar, so you're not really worried about, you know, not being able to learn a fight the first time around. And in fact, you go through there about, I think, 6 or 7 fights in the game, and you go through to the final boss, which you will lose against the first time. And you're playing as if it's a lineage. So you come back as your son 20 years later, with all the experience, yeah, with all the armor and stuff you bought throughout the course of your playthrough, and you fight through enemies again, and they're not always the same enemies, but you fight through, you know, the 6 bosses again, and then you fight the final boss. And the hope is that you keep playing enough to where you can finally beat the final boss and
cool.
Purchase the Infinity Blade.
I mean, I'm thinking about picking up an iPad soon. Is this a game that you think I should get?
Oh, definitely. I think it's $5, and
pretty good.
It's easily hours and hours of playtime, and it's just a quality experience. It adds a nice layer on top of the Punch-Out formula, if you will.
Right.
You know, to sort of suck you in more. And if the pure gameplay of Punch-Out wasn't enough, if it got frustrating, because this game does get hard, the RPG elements allow you to sort of grind it out. You know, if you can't beat it just based off your skill, you can, you know, level up, get more armor and stuff and play through it. And that's really engaging. And I would definitely say this is one of the games you'd want to get. you know, right out of the gate.
Oh, it sounds cool.
Does it kind of help pace things out in terms of having these trappings kind of stringing together the battles? Does it, you know, do you get less fatigued?
Definitely, yeah, because between battles you can kind of, you know, look around the castle, pick up some items, and, you know, shop in the little game store and mess around with your guy and equipment and stuff. There's enough to do between fights to where, yeah, it doesn't feel just like constant drag through seven fights, play the next lineage, do it over and over. There's enough stuff around it. Ultimately, there's not much to it. It's punch out with the leveling mechanic, and it's gorgeous, but it's definitely worth your time.
Nice. Well, anything else you want to share with us?
Sure. I guess to keep the iPad kind of kick going, I'll talk about World of Goo that just came out today on the iPad. And we all know, you know, World of Goo was an excellent game on WiiWare. It was the original sort of this is why WiiWare is a valid service kind of game. And it's as good, if not better, on the iPad. I would say that not having a pointer and just being able to use my finger lets me more consistently pick out the goo that I want to. I found that on the WiiWare version, a lot of times I'd be grabbing like the balloon goo when I wanted to grab one of the black ones. And it got kind of frustrating. It just kind of helps to be able to use your finger with it. Otherwise, it's the same game. So not much to say about it. I'm surprised that it runs so well. And, you know, it visually, it's on par. The sound is great still.
One interesting story I noticed recently related to the iPhone, iPad stuff is that in Japan, they're going to bring out Ghost Trick for the iPhone.
I heard about that.
But not here?
Well, the thing is, what you've got to remember is Ghost Trick has been out in Japan as a DS game for months.
You're right. Well, we did get the first Phoenix Wright game over here.
Years later, though.
Well, years later for everybody. The first game came out in, what was it, like 2003?
Well, years later on years later.
Yeah. I guess a more recent example of a DS to iPhone port would be the Lego Harry Potter game, which was actually pretty good, and it got up-res, and it looks way nicer and plays a bit nicer on the...
But I thought it was interesting that in Japan, the way they're going to try and sell it is that you get...
Oh, they're going to split it up.
There's a significant first segment of the game for free.
Wow.
It's almost like a demo, but I think it's a bit more significant than your average demo, probably much more significant than the one that's on the Nintendo channel right now. Mm-hmm. And then you can purchase either in segments the rest of the game, like at 600 yen a piece, or you can buy the whole thing for 1,500 yen.
Which equates to...
probably about, what, $16 or something?
$16, $17 is probably what the going rate for that game is in Japan right now.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they certainly would have launched for very much more.
They probably launched for 3,500 yen.
Either way, it's a phenomenal deal on a platform that ostensibly you can carry around with you, or that you're already carrying around with you everywhere.
I wonder if anyone, upon hearing that, will consider their options with respect to the DS game that's about to come out. Perhaps, you know, if there's a similar sort of delay, they might just wait a few months if they might prefer it.
Well, Greg, I did the exact same thing with Puzzle Quest 2, and I'm glad I did. Because really? I got it months later. I just got it last week. But it looks great on the iPad, and it was only $10.
It's an interesting sort of phenomenon that we're getting into. Obviously, this is nothing that's ever going to trouble, you know, Nintendo's first-party stuff on their handhelds, but I wonder where this is going to go, especially if it's happening in Japan.
Well, I would say with the rate that stuff like this is happening, and when you look at the unique titles these platforms are getting, they're definitely legitimate gaming experiences and platforms on their own. Like, you could you could just have an iPad as your handheld.
And perhaps it underscores the need, in some respects, for 3DS, you know, that you need something that's going to be, you know, value-added and more special.
Well, I wouldn't say that because, look, I would be comfortable playing, you know, an RPG or a long-form game on the DS, absolutely. Like, you know, I would never want to do that on iOS, iPad or otherwise. I mean, I don't want to play an action game like with a lot of complex movements. Easy like
Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah, no,
exactly.
Not so much.
You know, Cave Story, one of my favorite downloadable games this year. I adore on the DSi. Would I ever want to attempt to play it on iOS? No, hell no.
I've played Sonic on iOS and it is awful.
Most video games just need buttons. And I think when you get into the funky joysticks, like the virtual joysticks, stuff gets really hairy.
I think the most infamous example is that RE4 thing that came out on iOS that was supposed to be.
Oh, it wasn't that bad.
Well, Nathan, is anything else you want to bring up?
Very briefly mentioned that I'm kind of digging into the first Uncharted. I played 2 already.
Oh, right. So I was wondering whether you could resist sort of going to the better one, because I couldn't.
Uncharted 2 was so good.
I just went straight to 2.
And then recently I watched all the Indiana Jones movies in succession, and I was like, oh, I need more. And then so I went on and got Uncharted. And oh man, it is.
I thought he was going to say you watched all those Indiana Jones movies and thought, God, these would be better with Joe Pesci.
No.
I've often thought that, even before the Uncharted movie announcement.
Wow.
Yeah. But Uncharted 1, it's fun. You know, the thematic elements are still there. The story's still great. The graphics aren't as nice, but.
Well,
you know,
it's great now. there's a surprise coming later for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's ominous.
Well, okay, so what I've played based on like the 2 hours I've played, I can say that the gunplay is definitely the stinker here. Like that, oh
really?
My God, it's horrible.
So, I mean, how strongly would you recommend it or not to people who have already picked up the second one like myself?
Well, I guess I haven't completed it, so I don't know what you guys are referencing.
Apparently you haven't seen the horror that's coming.
Yeah, dude, there's some bad stuff coming later. It's mostly the story. The gameplay pretty much holds up the same throughout the game.
Is it worse than the Blue Man Group in Uncharted 2?
Yeah, there's some pretty dopey stuff in the second one, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Better or worse?
I played the second one first. Actually, no. I actually played the first one about halfway through, stopped. Then I played the second one. Then I went back and replayed the first one. And I gotta say that the first one is okay. It's not a bad game by any stretch. It's like a decent, like, you know, 7, maybe an 8 on a good day. But it's not at all required playing to get into the second one. So I would say that if you're on a budget, just get the second one.
Yeah, that's sort of the vibe I'm getting so far, because like there are situations where it's like, I really wish I wasn't playing this right now.
Yeah, I mean, but it's too bad they can't re-release. It's too bad they can't re-release the first one with the gameplay from the second one.
That's interesting, because for me with Uncharted 2, you know, the gunplay is seems pretty well executed, but it seemed to be a bit much of it at times for my taste anyway. So
from what I played of Uncharted 1, there's a lot of it.
Yeah, that's what I think. If there's like even more and it's not as well executed, I don't think.
And from what I can tell, they do a much better job of rationalizing the need for the gunplay in Uncharted 2. Because in Uncharted 1,
oh, really?
It's like
it's more wanton, like, in the first one.
Definitely is. What are all the pirates doing there?
Believe me, the pirates aren't the weird thing about that game.
Oh my God. See, I'm running through the jungle and people are yelling at me, "Hey, airplane man." Like, what the hell? And you're shooting me because of this.
Also, I'll just say that once someone tells you that he moves just like an orangutan, you can't unsee it.
These teases, Carl, really, you must stop.
I'm hoping you're referencing Sully.
Well, look, one other thing I'd like to mention just a little, just, you know, for a second. That new trailer for Uncharted 3 looks hot. Sand is the new snow, and I am psyched.
Oh, it didn't do anything for me. I'm so tired of seeing my homeland displayed in video games.
I'm still a little befuddled by the choice of setting, as it seems quite difficult to rationalize platform layouts.
Fallen airplanes, man. You're going to be hopping from crashing airplane to crashing airplane.
It's going to be an airplane graveyard. It's going to be like the Bermuda Triangle of airplanes.
Well, maybe it's just a six-axis game and you have to shake it fast enough to run up the sand dunes.
Are you insinuating that Factor 5 is making this?
Well, let's just hope they include a new game manual with it. It's like a new tome.
It's a 76-page book on how to play the game.
Well, thanks, Nate, for that. And now we move on to Carl, who I can pretty much guarantee has got something most of you won't expect.
Okay, so I've come out of review retirement, or exile, some would say.
I think exile is a good word for it after the ill-gotten review copies that never produced any
have been sold.
Criticism. For
Look,
the
all I'm going to say is by the time that this goes up, you know, that'll be
written. Are we going to have a review of Bui?
We're gonna have a review of Battalion Wars Wii. And,
no, we won't.
You know, I actually thought about at PAX East hand delivering them to John. Like,
you know what John would have done? John would have been like, "What the fuck is this?"
Anyway, all right. Well, the thing that I'm talking about here is the UDraw game tablet from THQ. If you don't know what it is, Google it.
Basically, you snap your Wii remote into a device that's got a big touch panel that you can use to draw on, and then, you know, it will translate that to images on the screen.
Correct, Greg, as you so eloquently put. I've actually got the press release right here. The UDRAW game tablet is a first-of-its-kind revolutionary game system that provides a unique and fun way for kids and families to play on Wii. The UDRAW game tablet will come bundled with UDRAW Studio game software. Other games available at launch include Pictionary and Dude's Big Adventure, with more titles debuting in 2011. And 2011 is in quotes, by the way.
What? This so-called year.
Let me ask for the purpose of review before my voice...
Because the thing is, no one wanted to get this. Like, no one in the staff was like, except for Zach, just because he wanted to draw more. He wanted to draw dicks on something else.
He wanted to draw phallic objects. Yeah. But let me review this press release with you before we go on.
Mm-hmm.
So the game was Dude's Big Adventure, correct?
It came with three games. It came with UDRAW Studio, Pictionary, and Dude's Big Adventure. Yes.
So first off, did you feel like he was a legitimate dude?
He was pretty dude-ish. I mean, he doesn't really have much of a personality.
Now, I'm not sure if you caught our conversation on this last week, but did you feel like he was too bro-y?
He was a little bro-y. He threw up some hang tens and like wahoos.
So this is Halo Reach Big Adventure then. Okay, moving on. So the next game, what was it?
The next game is Pictionary. I mean, it's fucking Pictionary. Like, was that
any bro-iness involved in that?
There was no bro-iness. It's like if you combine Pictionary and Monopoly, it's sort of like you're on a Monopoly board and you roll a dice, and depending on what square you hit, you'll have to draw a certain type of item.
And if you draw certain items, you go to jail. Right. So next game.
it's Pictionary. Here's a little behind the scenes action. I wanted this because of Pictionary. I just want a digital version of Pictionary to play with friends when I'm drunk. That's pretty much why I wanted this. And it's a great version of Pictionary. Like,
and you get the fact that it kind of blows it up on a big screen and stuff must be kind of cool.
Look, I mean, I think the UDRAW tablet is $70 and the games are $30. I don't think $30 is a right price for Pictionary, and I don't think the tablet itself is worth $70, but if you're a game reviewer and you can get it for free, it's totally worth it.
That is so very applicable to so many people.
Yes. Stunning review logic. If this costs nothing, it's worth that money.
The first thing I would want to know about something like this is just how little lag is there between you drawing something on the tablet and it's showing up on the screen.
It's instantaneous. Like that, I will say that. I don't find there to be much lag at all. I feel like that's one thing I'll say that they actually did do right. The way that it works is that, you know, it comes with a pen, and the pen has a kind of like a pointed button where the actual point would be. And right. So if you're pressing down on it, it's pressure sensitive in the fact that there's a button. So when you're pressing down on it enough to make the button press, then you're drawing. If you're not using it, then it's not, basically.
So the face buttons on the NES are pressure sensitive.
Yeah, sure. The big sort of sour point for UDRAW is that, yeah, there is a physical, you know, surface that you're pointing it on, that you're like, you know, you sort of have that tactile feedback. But yeah. if you take that tactile feedback out of the equation, there's nothing that you're doing on this tablet that you couldn't just do with a regular Wii remote controller. And you can do that without spending $70.
And what about the studio thing that you mentioned? Does it have anything that's just kind of cool to mess around with?
It's Microsoft Paint. It is Microsoft Paint.
It's that basic.
It's totally basic. There are some coloring options, and
it's Color a Dinosaur then.
Yeah, totally.
You have a $100 Color a Dinosaur.
But yeah, so that's UDRAW Studio. The big game to talk about though, the real game, quote unquote, in this bundle is Dude's Big Adventure, as we alluded to earlier.
So this is more of a traditional action game using the drawing interface.
Yeah, it is a real video game. And the thing is that Dude's Big Adventure actually isn't a bad game. There are four, it's got four modes: Pen Panic, Roly Poly, Bubble Trouble, and Fan Frenzy. Pen Panic is really, really bad. You use the stylus to draw like trampolines or little arrows to attack the people around, but you use the trampolines to kind of get them to jump through the obstacles. And that's pretty crappy. It's not really intuitive, and I just don't understand why I can't move him with the D-pad that is literally 4 inches away from this pen. Why do I have to use the pen to make him walk? It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, because the Wii remote is inset right next to the touch panel, right?
Can you use the... Is there any time you can use the buttons?
No. Once you plug in that controller, forget it.
So in that case, do they take full advantage of the drawing functionality in the actual gameplay?
Well, unfortunately, no. The unfortunate thing about it is that you don't ever really get to draw anything to... interact with the environment. You're always making motions, or you're putting the pen in a position.
So this is a DS game on the Wii, basically.
Sort of, yeah. That's a really good description of it.
Yeah, you're more making gestures with the pen rather than actually drawing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Roly Poly, where you use the motion control of, because the thing is, the obviously since the Wii remote is in there, you can use the
accelerometer.
Yeah, to kind of you move it back and forth, and that is actually pretty cool. It's like Super Monkey Ball meets Sonic, and it's actually really fun. And then there's Fan Frenzy, where you put the pen around, because dude's in this bubble, and you, depending on where you put the pen on the tablet, it'll blow him in different directions until you're guiding him through the level, and that's also kind of fun. It's like and then they've got some extra shit where you can paint him and customize him and all that good stuff.
No, it's a drawn to life kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Where you can kind of customize the way he looks.
Color a dude, bro.
And it's not a great game, but it's an acceptable game, and it's easily the most fun I had with this outside of Rough Draft Presents Pictionary, you know?
Well, I'm sure that would be a sight for anyone to see. So that's the You Draw from THQ for Carl. And now, James, if you've got anything you'd like to bring up for new business, or indeed, can you force anything out of that poor sore throat?
Through the maw that is my mouth. I'm still kind of hammering through Donkey Kong Country Returns, but to sort of placate the annoyance that the last levels have become, I have gone back and revived a old title that I find to be much more relaxing, which is...
Isn't everything more relaxing than that?
Which is anything. But in this particular case, it's My Life as a King, which is still hanging around on my Wii.
Oh.
So when I reviewed it, I basically committed to only review the core game, and then I bought DLC, but I had just played the game for like 30 hours, and I was like, all right, I'm done with this. I don't care that I just bought DLC. But now that I actually am playing it again with fresh eyes, it's a nice game to go back to. I think it's a game you could go back and play like once a year and be okay with it.
Mm.
And it's kind of a fun diversion. What's amusing is my city's much better planned this time, which means my adventurers don't waste the entire day ping-ponging around the city going to their various errands they have to run before they start their adventures, which means they don't run out of time, which is nice. It's a good change. The downside is that it took me... I'm about 5/6 of the way through the game, which gives you an idea of how much I get mad at Donkey Kong Country Returns. And I'm like at 116 days, and I beat the game originally in 70. So I'm apparently going much slower this time.
Hmm.
But it's probably still my favorite downloadable game on the Wii service. It's kind of a shame they didn't just finish the game, because it feels like they started this as a disc release, and then they just sort of half-assed it and made it a WiiWare release.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still run into situations where as the city grows and a lot of the DLC packs give you access to other stuff that makes the city much more visually distinct and exciting. And you see the different races of the Crystal Chronicles universe walking around your city, which is a nice change with the DLC.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They made you buy the extra races.
Yeah, you had to buy the Silks, the Ukes, and the Lilties. So when you put them into your city, you actually get like this sort of melting pot effect going on. There's still only a very limited number of character models, which is probably because it's the 40 megabyte hard cap that existed at that time.
But still exists today.
Yeah, but they probably weren't used to it at that point either.
Well, it was a launch game.
It was a launch game for the WiiWare service. So there's only like maybe 15 character models. So you'll often see two people who are wandering your city, especially now that my city's got like 40 houses in it. And they kind of meet at an intersection and start talking, but they're the same character model. So you see a person talking to himself, which is unsettling. Whereas if this had been a disc release, I feel like that probably would have been absolved of that particular sin. It's still a fun little game, though, for managing how your city should be laid out for its optimum effect of being essentially what is a tower defense game in reverse, where you are the swarm of monsters and the dungeons are the towers trying to stop you.
Yeah, that's why it was cool that you kind of saw the other side of that when they released My Life as a Dark Lord, which was a tower defense game.
Right, it's sort of the parallel that the dungeons you're defending are the towers that they're attacking, which is kind of neat. I also played a demo on DS, and not of Ghost Trick, but of this weird adventure puzzle game called 999.
Oh, I've heard a little about this before.
This game is freaking unsettling. Like what I'm reading about it, it's like it got an M rating and they don't actually show any of the gore. It's like, wow, what did they write? But the demo has you and this girl who apparently were both kidnapped on a boat, locked in a cabin of the boat. And neither of them remember how they got there. And, like, they weren't together when they were kidnapped. Like, they knew each other, like, 7 years ago.
Mm.
And they realize they're on a boat. And right about this time they realize they're on a boat, the window in their cabin shatters and water starts pouring in. And you have to unlock the door. It's a lot like those Flash games, like the Crimson Room and stuff like that. Only, apparently, it's a bunch of levels like that, but there's apparently a branching story.
Right.
So there's different endings depending on what decisions you make throughout the game. So I'm going to try to get a copy of that. Apparently it's incredibly difficult to procure. But you know, the Flash demo is out there on the game's website. If you were to search for 999, I think if you put in, it's 9 persons, 9 doors, 9 hours. I think it's the full name of the game.
Yeah.
You'll find it. It's interesting. So I'll probably have more about that at some point, because I've got to add another game to the top of that pile.
Well, yeah, but I trust you to actually work through that pile, unlike some people.
Yeah, well, my concern is that the game only came out last month, and it's already incredibly difficult to find.
Well, you're the only one of us who actually dares to venture into game stores to find out this kind of stuff.
Yes, I do. I actually go to stores and...
Oh, I gamefly. I never go to stores.
That's how I end up in my fits of Lindemann stacking, because I go to stores and I go, all right, I don't know what I want, but I haven't been to a store in a while and I want to buy something.
Mm.
And I go and I sit there and I comb through what they have. And a lot of times I'll find, you know, real treasures. Games that, you know, I didn't catch before and are hard to get now. And I'm like, I have a victory. And I go out of there thrilled, but then I come back home, I'm like, shit, there was already stuff in that pile.
I see. So now you're more out for the thrill of the hunt rather than the meal itself.
Yeah. But I mean, I do enjoy eating the meal, but the hunt,
as
the
we
hunt
all
itself
do.
Can be exciting.
Well, I'm going to wrap up new business here. First off, with me fulfilling a promise that I made, actually, overdue, I might add. If listeners might remember a few episodes ago, I pledged that I would hold Nintendo to account on the issue of Super Mario Bros. All-Stars.
Oh, no.
As I suspected that it might actually, in Europe, simply be 50 hertz on a disc. And despite me forgetting to do this for the past couple of weeks, I can now tell you that it is indeed 50 hertz on the disc. It looked like, you know, we kind of suspected it might be, because it did look an awful lot like a VC game on a disc, and this demonstrates that that's pretty much what it is. Certainly, this is very confounding, because it seems very possible that you could have had both the 60 hertz and the 50 hertz ROMs on the disc. It's a whole disc. You've got plenty of room to play with there. But to me, this is symptomatic. Although this is a PAL problem, obviously, because of the way that PAL virtual console games are handled, it is symptomatic of the overall sloppiness and kind of just laziness of the package. The soundtrack, for instance, has just one song from each of the kind of mainline Mario games, and it's always like the first level theme or something. It's like the most obvious track.
Which they posted many of them on the Iwata-esque website for it.
Then also the art book, or if you want to call it that, the booklet is, you know, pretty sort of insubstantial considering the wealth of development materials they must have at NCL. It really is just quite a thoughtless kind of package for such an occasion. It makes me think of when I read Jeremy Parrish's review for the special edition Mario All-Stars at 1UP, he kind of made an interesting comparison where he said, well, you know, if we were thinking of analogous collections or limited editions for these like seminal works in other media, for instance, what they do with the Criterion Collection for movies on DVD in America, this Super Mario All-Stars compares very unfavorably in that regard. It really doesn't befit Mario's 25th anniversary, quite apart from the PAL problems, but obviously that is really the cherry on the cake.
I mean, I guess the blame for this falls on NOE.
Well, I wouldn't be too quick to say that, as the low rent approach, as I see it, to the whole package appears to have come from the top.
Right, NCL.
But I'm sure they in Japan have no regrets, given that it's already sold more than 700,000 copies, which is about 3 times the sales of Kirby's Epic Yarn over there, for example.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, I told Nintendo they're on notice. I've now at least held them to account. If any of our listeners out there have ideas for some sort of reprisal about this, you could certainly email that in to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I'm kind of running out of dry style ideas on that one. But I did want to begin my new business proper with a Ghosts and Goblins update, actually. If you remember, we left the story last week at me being stuck at a boss on the last level with the full assumption that if I beat that boss, I would simply be required to beat the whole game again because I didn't have any kind of special weapon or anything at the time. But despite this, for some reason, I did actually attempt to beat the boss. I persevered, I beat him, and then sure enough, the screen flashes black, and all of a sudden it just says, "Weapon has no effect. Find a cross," which is the special weapon. I think it was said to a shield in the Western versions. But then right. There's something interesting happened. Then all of a sudden, to my surprise, I was warped back just two levels rather than the full six to the beginning of the game. So that was a shock. All of a sudden, I started to think, wait a minute. Maybe for the arcade version, you don't actually have to do the whole game again. Maybe it was a bit more sensible. I don't know. So I died a few times trying to generate the special weapon. Then after I got it, I kept going, beat the boss again. Then all of a sudden I was warped to fight the final super boss. I beat him. He dissolved in flames. It looked like it was all over. And then it says, "This room is a trap devised by Satan.
Of course it was.
Proceed relentlessly and try again."
Oh my god. Capcom, you bastards. But you know, when you said they kicked you back two levels, I'm like, well, that doesn't seem like a Capcom arcade game. I know everything about Capcom arcade games, and they would kick you back to levels that don't exist just to make you die more times.
I know, what is it with Capcom?
They actually devised a mechanism to kick you back twice.
So, for some reason after this, I mean, I must say, I was somewhat ashamed of the fact that I was slightly surprised by this turn of events, but nevertheless, I inexplicably set about actually trying to beat the game again.
Did you proceed rapidly?
Relentlessly, actually.
Relentlessly, okay.
I did, in fact, eventually get to the end of the game again. I got to the final boss again. I beat the final boss again. And all you get for actually beating the game is a screen that says, "Congratulations, this story is happy end." And then something like, "As you are a brave knight, you feel strength flowing through you." Do it again.
So do you feel strength?
Well, how could I not after beating Ghosts and Goblins? It's supposed to be one of the hardest games of all time, and I've beat it. Now, obviously, this involves the use of unlimited credits and the suspend feature. I'm sure if every time I press continue, that was a quarter, I would have spent a lot of money by now. But I still feel kind of proud to have done it, and believe it or not, I did actually kind of enjoy it as well. There was some fun in there, if that means anything. But almost as a reward for all my travails in beating Ghosts and Goblins, and DKC Returns for that matter, my copy of Kirby's Epic Yarn finally showed up this week.
I think they're unrelated, but okay.
Well, I think a game where you can't die is a very apt reward for beating Ghosts and Goblins. But in fact, it does seem indeed that the Postal Service here has won the war of ineptitude with Nintendo of Europe quite decisively, as my import copy arrived more than two full months before the official PAL date at the end of February, despite itself coming 7 weeks late. By now I have actually played through pretty much all the game, and I found it to be pretty pleasurable, coming as a massive difficulty trough following Ghosts and Goblins, but I won't talk about it too much at this point because there's much been said about it already, but there's certainly no denying the charm, the very enchanting aesthetic, and the gameplay is always straightforward, and you know, maybe sometimes it's a little bit too straightforward for my taste, but the transformations especially and the level design as well help prevent it from ever being really monotonous despite being straightforward. But I did want to say I've also, like Johnny, been especially fond of the soundtrack, especially the piano-driven parts to it, which is indeed much of it. There are a few tracks that do not feature the piano so strongly that I would describe as getting excessively twee at that point. But my favourite it's a part of the soundtrack that I thought I had to bring up. It's one of the is a song that plays during one of the scrolling shooter sections that you get, where you fight a boss at the end of a level, and the music sounds pretty much exactly like a Gradius boss stage done in piano, which is just great. Absolutely love it. Which it does kind of make sense because the guys from Good Feel actually did were sort of constituted of people that used to work at Konami at one point, and it did make me think that, you know, if they don't make that Yoshi game that we all know they really should be making right now, I wouldn't mind seeing them do a scrolling shooter. And perhaps, you know, one a bit like some of the platformers that they've already created for Wii, where you don't have to be some sort of shooter savant to actually enjoy it. You know, you can build in sort of multiple tiers of achievement, kind of like the treasure fighting in Wario Land or something. I think if they could bring that kind of dimension to a scrolling shooter, that would be wonderful. But Kirby's Epic Yarn has been a lot of fun. I'm just grateful to have had the chance to play it now before the end of the year, so I feel like I've played all the sort of big hitters on Wii before the year is out, and indeed just in time for our Wii report card segment coming up in the second part of the show, as well as your listener mail. So stick around after the break.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at nintendoworldreport.com.
I'm doing all the now playing for the site this week, so gonna go through it real quick because we got a lot of new content. We have Pedro's unboxing of the Super Mario All-Stars 25th Anniversary Edition, which Greg spoke of earlier in such glowing terms.
Oh yeah, it's a real.
You can
package.
See all the stuff in the box there because we love unboxing vlogs, and you can also see Pedro's collection of Mario regalia.
Some would call it paraphernalia.
But those people would not be on the show again. We also have a blog post that is the quote long lost videos of the RFN panel at PAX East, which is the video of our first live panel that somehow went missing for 7 months.
I noticed that I move my hands a lot when I talk.
I noticed that John's head reflects the massive window that we were sitting in front of during the entire show.
I also noticed that Mike Sklens picks his beard like a motherfucker. He would not stop doing it. I wanted to reach in and slap him in the face.
We also have a huge number of reviews on the site this week. I mean, it is the season. So we're going to go in reverse quality order. We have Nathan's review of Oops Prank Party, which he basically called the worst game he's played.
I used to think that this game was called Oops Pants Party, which was a lot more interesting.
Well, it's bad. Slightly up on the scale of terribleness, we have the Beyblade Metal Fusion review from Zach Miller, which is a DS game about tops in combat. Mm. Pedro has given us Gummy Bear Mini Golf, which, if you couldn't guess, is from Storm City Games, which is probably all I need to tell you about it.
Agreed.
One of these days, they're going to hear you guys talk about them, and they're going to be
very sad.
And they're
going to keep sending us stuff.
Yeah.
And lastly, we have a review of Disney's Epic Mickey from Neil Ronahan, which he found the style to be very appealing, but the game itself to be somewhat disappointing.
I guess you could say we were all slipped in Epic Mickey.
No, you can't. You cannot say that. He was disappointed, to say the least, and you could feel it in his review.
Well, thanks for that, James. That's everything.
I'm sorry to all our listeners.
You can check out all of that and assuredly more at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to part two. We're now going to move into some listener mail. The first one is from Pluggerbugs, and he writes, after listening to episode 2 recurring, I'm pretty sure I don't have Lindemann syndrome, but instead the Mets condition.
You need penicillin.
Several episodes back, he waxed lyrical about Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. He stated a convincing case and ticked off all the right boxes, so without even playing the demo, I got the game for PSN. I love it. It's exactly what I wanted, and it's good fun. The downside is that now his opinion has become the deciding vote for my purchase decisions. For example, last week Johnny mentioned fluidity in the same praiseworthy manner, and despite the fact that I have like 10 games that I want to buy, therefore sidestepping Lindemann syndrome, fluidity has jumped straight to the top of my list to buy next. Do any of you treat people's opinions on games the same way?
Mine? I treat my opinion very highly.
Yes, we all know that, James.
Because it's correct.
I thought it was best to handle this letter without Johnny here.
I have the anti-Met syndrome, which is to say if Johnny likes it, it's probably something I should avoid. see, for example, his stunning ability to defend Metroid 2.
Okay, James is half joking, but I kind of agree in that, not about Johnny, but that there are some people where if they do go on over its praises, I'll sort of pay less attention to a game, not because I think that person is an idiot, although that is sometimes the case, but because once I get to know someone's video game taste, I can tell when mine isn't
aligned. Yeah,
exactly. Like, I think Greg and I probably have very different video game styles, so if Greg likes a game, I'm not going to all of a sudden say, well, fuck that game.
So you're telling me you haven't bought a Japanese Wii to play Ghosts and Goblins Arcade already?
I'm telling you that I haven't. Like, if James says, you know, I usually wouldn't like this game, but I do like it, then I might pay attention.
I think this, with me, it will be, again, on a more of a case-by-case basis. You know, for instance, if we go back to our illustrious Dr. Metz, if Dr. Metz were to say something about a Metroid-type explorative kind of game, but it's this action and power-ups and all that kind of stuff, I would seriously consider playing that. I have done that with stuff like Spider-Man Web of Shadows, things like that, and been very pleased with the outcome. But on the other hand, you know, he could still be talking about DQ9 tonight, and I'm not going to rush out and buy it.
Well, to be fair, if we didn't threaten to kill him, he probably would be. So.
Well, you know, he has talked a lot about that game, and I don't doubt its quality, but, you know, I've got a kind of a... I think I've probably reached my saturation point for that kind of experience playing Pokemon this year. I certainly wouldn't rule it out playing it, you know, eventually, even so, but I would say that just that person isn't enough for me, you know?
It's, sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's no one I really completely sync up with, but of course...
Who does? I mean...
Yeah, you know, there are persons whose opinions I respect, and, you know, I will look more closely at what they have to say about a game, but I'll never just immediately say, oh, you liked it? Well, I'll get it.
There is one, actually, for me, and that is Mike Sklens, because if something can shake him out of his rock band coma, it must be amazing.
Yeah, that's not a bad argument, but we did get a lot of responses in the talk back and stuff to the horn, the Lindemann syndrome. Apparently, yeah. John has lit the touch paper on this one.
Unfortunately, most HMOs won't cover it.
There we go.
I didn't really talk about this as part of the question. It's not really something I've ever had a problem with. I generally tend to work through games. The only thing I would say is probably sub virtual console games and maybe downloadable games.
You feel less committed to them because they don't physically look you in the face when you're around them.
I think that's a fair point. Problem with games on the App Store.
Because they're awful, right?
Well, even if they're good, you know, even if there's something I would like to sit down and play, there's always something else that's coming out. And I get a promo code for it, or I buy it for $1.
Oh, yes.
You know, and then it sits. And even today, I got 4 new games. And I know I'm not going to beat them all. It's ridiculous. And there's nothing I can do. And they're all good games.
Well, I suppose this is one way in which, on the one hand, you've got $60 games that seem to, well, in some cases anyway, with like multiplayer and stuff, seem to be a kind of escalating war to get people to play for longer and longer, or you're offering the carrot of being able to play for hundreds of hours as the reason to buy it.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's like with the App Store or downloadable games in general, it seems like, well, this is for people who's like, if you want to pick something up, that you probably won't play in its entirety, even if it's small, but you're paying so little to start with, you won't feel bad about that.
You do feel bad, though, because then you're just hemorrhaging Lindy's, and you're trying to gather them all and rationalize, like, okay, I'm going to play these, and you can't.
I think if you have under 200, then you were in full-blown Lindemann syndrome.
Under 200?
Well, if you have over 200 unplayed games, and you're full-blown Lindemann.
Okay.
If you're under that, then I guess you're maybe a Mike's Cleanse.
The conversion rate for cat helmets is 3-1. So every cat helmet you have counts as 3 unplayed games.
Oh, no, I don't actually. I don't do special editions.
Well, it's fair to say, I think we all look up to Johnny. We all respect his opinion terribly much, but I don't think any of us are going to adopt a 1-to-1 purchasing policy with his habits, especially James, anytime soon.
No, I mean, it's unfair to say there's nobody on staff whose opinion I respect, because we've already gone over the fact that I do greatly respect Carly's opinion, just because we have similar tastes in some games. Mm-hmm. So somehow I ended up buying Endless Ocean 2. I mean, is that so far outside my wheelhouse? Well, yeah, but it was suggested, so I'm like, hell, let's go for it.
So you're saying you've suffered from a similar condition, is that?
No, because that's pretty much the only example. The other stuff that may have been overlapped was stuff that I was going to buy anyway.
James has full-blown youngs.
No, definitely not. That cannot stay in.
How many younglings do you have, James?
No, it's one game. We've already discussed it before.
We will now move on to the second letter. Nathan, you've got this one.
Kyle writes, "Call me a sucker if you must, sucker, but I never really got into the handheld gaming scene ever until now. As of now, the 3DS is around the corner, but there is no way I will have the $250 at least to drop on it. So instead, I went out and sprung on a system in the last hurrah of its life cycle. The fact I got some pretty great value sealed the deal. In total, I got the DSi XL, New Super Mario Bros., and Layton for $185, or less than the XL was alone 6 months ago. How long do you think Nintendo will try to keep the DSi around once the 3DS comes out? Will they just kill it? Will the light finally go away? Or will they keep the DSi as a value alternative to the 3DS?
I think that the DS in general will probably have a decent life up to a year after the 3DS. I mean, look at the GBA, for example. I mean, we got some really great games after the DS came out.
Yeah, but they tried to kill the GBA, though.
Yeah, I think we're going to see some good third-party support from smaller publishers, maybe.
Sure. But I mean, you know, again, these are Nintendo-published games, but we got Minish Cap after the DS came out. We got WarioWare, which one was it?
Not the Twisted was definitely after.
Yeah, yeah. And what was the other one? Rhythm Heaven came out on GBA after the DS?
Well, I mean, not here. And Twisted came out in Japan before the DS.
Oh, did it?
Okay. Yeah, it was a big delay there.
Well, and when you compare total DS hardware sales to the GBA, you have a lot more people with the DS in their home.
Well, the GBA wasn't around as long either.
It wasn't, then.
Well, that's true, but either way, there are still more DSs out there in homes, and people aren't going to make that immediate upgrade.
We've already seen Nintendo's decommitting from the DS, though. I mean, it was visually apparent at E3. They had one row of DS units, and that was their games, and that was it.
I mean, as it should be. It's their new console. They should be putting all of their power behind it. But I still think, like, you know, like Nate said, we're going to be seeing some pretty decent third party support. And I mean, look, if you just got a DS, you have years worth of games to play.
Oh yeah,
like, exactly. There's no shortage of great stuff to find. So I think you'll be fine.
You know, I just went out and I got a PS3 recently, and I'm loving it because I have so many $14 games I can go out that are phenomenal. So you really made a good choice.
This is what I had with last year, like Dead Space for £10, you know, that kind of stuff. It's nice, and that's presumably is a lot of what Kyle's got to look forward to on DS.
Here's a cold hard fact for you, Kyle. There is no way that paying for a system that has literally over 100 amazing games for it is a bad idea.
Yeah.
I think just how successful it is, I think it will keep getting support for a while, probably more so than the GBA, because I think there's going to be more separation between DS and 3DS, despite
definitely
the brand continuity, than there was between GBA and the original DS, because, first of all, the price point. I mean, there is going to be this real big gulf. I mean, 3DS, if it's 250, but we still don't know, as Carl kind of alluded to in the email, it could be 300, possibly. I certainly couldn't imagine it being more than that. But it,
when and how much.
The fact is that makes it one of the highest price of entry platforms on the market of any sort, let alone handheld. I mean, you know, with all the consoles that, and people say the consoles are overpriced at the minute, you know, that we're overdue for further price drops, and yet the 3DS will be coming in above certain SKUs, certainly above the Wii, and above certain SKUs of the other HD platforms. So it's going to be a premium device, and I don't think Nintendo, you know, Nintendo is going to be happy to sell it to the people who are willing to buy it, but they're not going to be under any illusions that everyone is going to go out and buy it straight away.
No, and look, they're not going to be able to supply all of the people who are going to buy it at launch.
No,
like
that's impossible. Well, I mean, but granted, you'll be able to walk in on launch day and get one. But still,
yeah. Let's not bring up those you know.
No, that comes up every time a system gets launched now.
Yeah. We were wrong. Look, we're sorry. We are sorry.
Incredibly, 2 years worth of wrong.
Never forget.
Look, for the record, that was Jonathan Metz who said that, not me.
There was consensus.
I agreed with it, but he was the mastermind of that horrible idea.
And Stan was very much on board, as I recall, as well.
Yeah.
What do you think about Kyle's question about the light going away? Do you think that's more likely that they'd phase out the DSi and keep the light?
No. I think the light's pretty much already gone, isn't it?
Is it?
No. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, in Japan, yes, the light has been heavily marginalized.
Extinguished.
But not so much in America. I think, as we've discussed before, in America, the recent price cuts were applied to the DSi family of systems or whatever. But all that did was bring them closer to the light. The light actually effectively sort of increased, almost as if, you know, that was doing relatively better given the circumstances. So they didn't feel the need to make that cheaper.
I think the light probably will drop off after this holiday season simply because they just don't need it anymore. They're gonna have three products on the market by March, and they don't really need a fourth. The XL and the I have a market right now that the Lite doesn't have. That is a much higher profit margin for Nintendo, which is the DSiWare.
Mm-hmm. Well, do we know how much you know how well DSiWare is actually doing for Nintendo?
It doesn't matter. I mean, we've seen some numbers in the past, but it really doesn't matter because they take such a huge cut of the first percentage of sales that you can put out shit like the flashing screens, and they don't care.
Well, another thing to consider just with the DS generally is that, I mean, Iwata made comments, you know, and you can understand, because, I mean, what was it? They sold 900,000 DS in general during the Black Friday week or whatever.
Yes.
You know, it's a lot of new owners there, so like Kyle. And I think Iwata's made comments that he sees that they can, to some extent, kind of almost doing the opposite of what they did with the GBA, where they actually restricted new games being localized, is sort of reaching back into the well and localizing stuff that had not been localized before. And you've already seen this in Europe to some extent. You've jammed with the band. Just came out of nowhere, like a couple of years late. And I mean, this isn't an old game, but they did bring out Last Window here, the Hotel Dusk sequel, for instance. And I mean, will that even apply to America? Because they kind of haven't done that yet.
No.
But it's a possibility. I'm trying to think of what titles would be kind of.
It is possible we will get Doki Doki Majo Shinpan in the next 6 months.
Is that a Nintendo title?
Well, I think it would be awesome if we finally got those Jump All-Star Fighting games.
Yeah, but the license issues on those are just horrendous.
Yeah, they are pretty bad. But even so, I mean, they were supposed to be really great, and it would be great to finally have them.
I think something that's forthcoming in Europe again, no word on in America, is a localization of the first Inazuma game for DS.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Which is like another series that, you know, just be kind of frozen out. Again, obviously, being that it's like soccer based, it's a lot more viable in Europe. But that is a level 5 game. It's not a Nintendo thing. So, kind of, obviously, they have had success localizing level 5 stuff with Layton before. So, I could see why it's a kind of, in a sense, is a natural fit. But maybe they won't just limit themselves to the first party titles that didn't make the cut.
Right. I mean, the fire sale on level 5 properties outside of Japan is going to end soon because level 5 America opened a couple months ago and level 5 Europe opens this month.
Yeah.
So Nintendo's got to get while the getting's good.
Dude, can I just say how awesome I think it is, how awesomely level 5 has done in the last, like, 4 or 5 years?
They're killing it.
Dude, it is so great because they really, like, they had like the Dark Cloud games, and they had that one other PS2 RPG that was kind of shitty, and then they just fucking exploded.
Well, you know, I think even the Dark Cloud games were good.
Yeah, they were okay. The second one was better than the first.
True, I know, but now we're sitting at Dragon Quest IX and Layton 3, and it's just leaps and bounds over that.
Oh, they're very much going in the opposite direction from just about everyone else in Japan.
Yes, they're one of only two Japanese software developers that grew. And we know who the other one is.
Grasshopper, right? We're talking about Grasshopper?
Yeah, they grew their own drugs so they could continue to make their games.
I mean, so I wouldn't be too worried about them dropping the DS like a stone. They are going to keep it on a little sort of parallel path for a while, I think. And they probably will actually bring out a few games along the way. They even announced like a new Kirby for DS back when they dropped the 3DS bomb in Japan.
Yes, they did. And they told us nothing about it except there's a billion Kirbys on screen.
Yeah, it's multiple Kirbys. And also, my personal pick for a game to be localized would be the second GB Robo DS game. I would love to see that in English.
I know our good buddy Evan Birchfield would be very excited.
The only other thought I have regarding what they might do with respect to the DS is what they did with the GBA, and this is why we saw a lot of dreck towards the end of the GBA's life, was they basically cut their cut of a GBA development.
The licensing fee, yeah.
Yeah, so what they might do is they might say, all right, once 3DS has its legs under it, we'll cut the license fee on the DS and say, okay, whoever wants to make Storm City games like games can keep making them.
So what you're saying is that the good games that do come out later into the DS's life will be swamped by awful ones.
Pretty much. Do you remember? So if you go to a big box retailer, you'll still see some very late GBA games on shelves that are undeniably terrible, and that's why they've sat on that shelf for like 3 years.
I'm sure the discerning customer will be
bought a 3DS and gone, ooh.
Well, now we're going to move on from all this portable silliness to get on to the feature that we've got prepared. So it's going to be a Wii report card, both for 2010, looking back at this year, but also for the Wii's life cycle to date, as are all 4 years. This is a little throwback to a segment that Carl did back in episode 78, my first appearance on the show.
That is right.
And that was after the Wii had been out for all of 1 year. And it was myself, Carl, Mike Sklens, and Johnny looking back at that first year. So we thought we were having Carl on the show now. It would be nice to sort of bring back the format. We're going to be grading the Wii on four different categories, four different aspects of its performance, and then a sort of overall personal satisfaction at the end. And I'm going to give it over to Carl in the spirit of nostalgia to guide us through this report card format.
Well, hello and welcome, folks, to the feature. And so what we're doing here, obviously, is just like Greg said, I don't really have to repeat it, but so why don't we start off with the very first category. So first up, we've got our retail software. So we're going to be talking about the diversity and the quality of the games, factoring in the innovation, third-party support, etc. I guess why don't we kick it off with Nate? What do you think of the retail software for the Wii, first-party, third-party, such, for 2010?
I think for 2010, yeah, this year, I think I'd give it a solid B, you know. There haven't been, as far as number of titles, we're not seeing as many big-budget titles that you get on like a 360 or PS3, but we still have a pretty good variety of stuff out there. Some good platformers, shooters, and stuff like Monster Hunter this year. I don't know. I think there's a lot out there, and you could make a Wii by itself work for you. Of course, back in 2007, I don't think that was the case.
Probably not. No. I feel similarly to Nathan. I'm thinking kind of BB plus kind of range for this. I mean, it's been a good year. I mean, it really has compared to other years. You've had, obviously, Galaxy 2 as a headliner is very strong. You've got stuff like DKC and Kirby to complement that in a Punishment 2 and sort of a more of a niche kick. Monster Hunter gives you quite a different kind of gameplay experience. You've got actually had some good shooters, arguably for the first time with Black Ops and GoldenEye coming out at the end of the year. I mean, it's been quite strong, I would say.
I'm you know, back in 07, I gave this section a C, and I would say I would go as far as I'm not quite at A status, but just below it, you know, a B plus, I guess.
Well, I think for me personally, you know, maybe it is an A, you know, because like stuff like Sin of Punishment, I played that last year with Japan, but you know, that's, I love that. The side scrollers, I love that kind of stuff. But the thing is, the full breadth isn't quite there to give it an A.
I agree. Right. That's kind of how I feel. I feel like there isn't the quantity, but the quality is absolutely there. You got a ton of different types of games this year. Sin of Punishment 2 coming out, like, that is so far left from anything you'd usually get with Nintendo. We had, of course, No More Heroes 2 at the top of the year, which was great and is probably my game of the year. And so, you know, I feel like we just got a really wide variety of games this year.
I think I think for me it was wider than we've perhaps been accustomed to, but it still kind of clusters in the kinds of games that I like personally. But, you know, for instance, RPG-wise, outside of Monster Hunter, which is quite, you know, it's, you ain't got a lot there.
That's kind of where I was going to go with it, because they've had some categories they've pretty much just, like, they probably over-platformed this year.
Yeah, they were the wrong.
And I mean, do we think that, you know, one of those platformers might have been in 2011 if they'd got Zelda done on time, which would have been a bit
possibly
more of a compliment?
But I mean, we were pretty well covered in the action-adventure genre, too. So even if they flipped them, they probably still didn't quite get it.
Obviously, James' differing affections for these two franchises illustrates that they're not exactly perfectly overlapping, but, you know, Metroid and Zelda are not that different from each other in terms
except one's good. Yes, that's the primary difference.
I preempted that, James. I'm not. Am I supposed to fall out of my seat because you made that remark?
No, this isn't for you.
This is all for James.
The truth. But you have other genres. Even the party genre, which is Nintendo's bread and butter on the GameCube, was pretty poorly represented. We had Wii Party, which wasn't great.
Yeah, well, it wasn't poorly represented in quantity. It seemed like, I mean, just from the now playing segments, I feel like we've collectively uttered the word party far too many times.
Well, to be fair, there was Wii Party and Guilty Party, both had party in their names.
Yeah, Pac-Man Party from last week, Prank Party.
But neither of those games were very good.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, the quality, insofar as you might kind of liken them to something like Wii Sports Resort, which can also function as a party, I'm sure they're not comparable in quality.
So, I mean, you'd think that Nintendo, being very heavily leveraged on multiplayer experience, would have a stronger lineup of things like party games.
Well, look, it doesn't really matter anyway, because the party game genre peaked at Boom Blocks 2 anyway, so...
Yeah, it did, I agree.
That's very good.
Well, and I think, you know, I'm not looking at this very honestly when I say that as a standalone, the Wii is a B, because that's not how the Wii exists in my house. It's a complement to two other systems and my handhelds and my PC. You know, I don't need to have all my games on the Wii. I think if I look at the quality of what I purchased on the Wii, I'm very happy with everything I bought this year.
If you take the year as a whole, and you could probably say, okay, all the things were covered, but if you take the Wii as a year-long experience, it's not a B. It's got to be lower than a B because it's so backloaded.
So, yeah, looking at it as a kind of continuous stream kind of deal. I mean, what grade would you put on it then, James?
Probably a high C.
C plus?
Just because of how the titles were distributed throughout the year?
Well, because they were distributed really, really heavily at the end. So, we said, there were two really good shooters that came out this year. Yeah, but they both came out the same month.
At the same time.
That's a fair month. That's a fair point, yeah.
And so up until that point, there were no shooters worth playing on the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned the RPG genre. I could think of two, and both of them are really pushing the description of RPG. Yeah. I'm not counting Uprise Fantasia because that was a production disaster.
Well, you know, and actually a lot of the big consoles have been failing in the RPG genre
this year. This has been a bad generation for it.
It definitely has.
The Wii has done particularly poorly in that field.
Definitely.
Which is stupid because Nintendo has RPGs they own right now. They can bring out.
Well, you know, and RPGs have always been about glitz, and I think it's getting really expensive to make those big Final Fantasy 13s. So that's probably, that's why we're seeing less and less.
The game gets delayed for years, and then...
Well, and it doesn't have that mass market appeal, or the same mass market appeal as it would have in the SNES days.
It's an important feather for a console. And they really kind of let us down on that one, since they've got at least two they could bring out from Japan.
That's true, but I don't think it's fair, because clearly the RPGs are being made for the DS. And
we're not
grading the DS, but that's where they went, and that's where people want them in Japan.
That's true, but they already do have RPGs they have made for the Wii that they own. that are done.
That you want.
Xenoblade's got great.
Xenoblade's gotten really high
reviews. Was Crystal Bears this year?
I think it was the very... Wasn't it like Boxing Day last year? Also, it was so...
Yeah,
like...
it was. It was the day after Christmas, and it's not an RPG. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is. I've beaten it, and I still can't put that game into words.
Is that good?
No.
I know.
It was that confounding.
But yeah, even with the backloading, as James mentioned, I still think it's a really strong year for Wii, because when I look back on this year as a whole, I'm going to look at it as a whole, and looking at it as just, look, this is what came out this year, I got to give it a B.
I don't think we can discount James's point, though, because
it's
true.
No, I think it's an absolutely fair point.
Some people only have a Wii, and, you know, performance across the board does count.
And it stands in contrast to the kind of thing that's happening now, where, like, the HD systems tend to have this bevy of big games in quarter one, because, you know, they kind of got bumped out of the previous quarter four for whatever reason, and, you know, by comparison, it does look a bit sparse on Wii, I think. Yeah.
But, you know, again, if I compare what I played on my Wii this year to playing what I played on my 360, I gotta say they're about even as far as number of titles and quality of titles. I gotta say, like, I wouldn't say that, oh man, the Wii was totally my second fiddle this year. I'd say it competed head to head with my 360, so.
It did, and that's why I'm looking at it as, you know, it's not the only system I own. I did have about 4 good titles on 360 this year, and, you know, they were complemented nicely by what I got on the Wii, because it's different.
Absolutely.
A different kind of game, like all those platformers.
So, moving on to kind of grading the whole life cycle software, you know, the whole library, it's definitely quite tricky. But I mean, for me, I would have to say, given that this is an above average year for it, I think the overall grade's got to be lower.
Oh yeah, no, it is lower.
I put it at a C.
I give him a C+, maybe a C+. You know, maybe. I mean, I think last year I can't even remember what I played. That's pretty bad.
Got to look at also like 2008. You know, it's a really kind of split year, because you start off with like Smash Brothers and Mario Kart so early, and then the second
then
half. The second half was pretty much Wario Land for me with that year. You know, that was about it. So there's been some really kind of dry spells.
What's difficult for me about grading the system as a whole is there are experiences on the system that I really enjoy greatly, but there are just holes in its lineup.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And like we spoke about RPGs, where we said there's, what, 5 total on the Wii that are worth speaking of.
Maybe. Depending on your tastes, yeah.
You're throwing in stuff like Fire Emblem there, if you want to call it an RPG. I mean, that's what you have to do to get to 5.
I mean, again, though, if we're comparing how we're grading the Wii compared to how we're looking at other systems, I am giving the Wii kind of a mediocre score of a C+, but on the whole, I'd say this generation, really, like I said, as a whole, has sort of not really delivered. I don't think that any one console is the one console to get. You know, they're all sort of split, and they all sort of have really big holes in their release schedule. I wouldn't say that the 360 had a particularly awesome year last year anyway. Like, I feel like we sort of had an ebb and flow in this generation cycle, and, you know, let's just say the ebbs and flows aren't always around the same.
Right. But I think if I had to point to where more of my favorite titles were, I would not point to the Wii.
I would give the edge to a 360 or PS3, absolutely.
Definitely. There are more titles that I enjoy on those systems. And that has nothing to do with them being HD. It's just, you know, the nature of what's coming out on them.
Well, I feel like the Wii and 360 are two great systems to pair each other with.
They definitely
because
are.
I feel like I get my, you know, Western hardcore gaming done on the 360, and then I get my Nintendo games on the Wii. And you can't get those on other systems, so I'm fine with having them both.
See, the problem is, for a lot of people, the downloadable arena on the 360 is infringing on what you're getting on Nintendo. Because you look at a platformer like Super Meat Boy, and that is, it's not a Nintendo platformer, but it is of the quality of the platformers we're getting on the Wii.
Yeah, I mean, my game of the year last year was Splosion Man, which is an XBLA title, and that would have been spectacular on the Wii. And
it would have been.
Well, I mean, in general, these concerns are very prominent, but I mean, just looking at it for a minute, in terms of how well do you think Nintendo have done at populating the system with first-party games? Mm-hmm. Do you think they've done the best job that they might have done?
Well, what's weird for them as a company, though, is they get on these new Play Control and then the Wii blank games. They just sort of make these kicks. And this year they got on another kick with all their 2D platformers.
Sure.
They actually really started last year with New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, well, that was the one, wasn't it? That's what kind of got the ball
That
rolling.
Is Genesis. And I'm curious what the hell goes on there where they're just like, all right, we need 6 2D platformers. Go.
And that really does become a problem. Even though they're all good games, you end up directly comparing them and saying, I'm getting a similar experience from these titles. Which one do I want? Not, let me get both. The average gamer. I'm not going
to
buy both.
Yeah, that's the thing. See, I mean, I'm happy to get both. I'm happy to have loads, but a lot of people wouldn't be. I mean, you could recognize that.
But what's interesting is that they went on a brief purchasing spree of small companies, you know, about 5 years ago.
Monolith's off of being one of them.
Monolith, yeah. I mean, they have these companies that they don't really seem to let them do anything.
Yeah, you know, they sort of buy these companies with the intent of, oh, they're going to do their usual thing, but for us. And then they just force the Nintendo philosophy
on
them.
They make them do...
Disaster. Yeah.
Disaster.
Exactly. So, and it sort of begs the question, like, well, then why even buy them to begin with?
No, they've made an effort to try and, you know, bridge some of those gaps. But of course, as typically kind of arises, that's very much aimed at the Japanese market. You know, they've been directing resources to plug holes in the JRPG market, you know, not the Western RPG, not first person shooters.
They plugged a resource they already own at Xenoblade.
Yeah.
A company who probably thought, man, hopefully they're not going to make us make another disaster game. I don't want to do that anymore.
So, James, what would you put on it over the life cycle?
Oh, it's hard because there are games that I really adore that came out on Wii that I would not be able to give up on the experience. Maybe a low B, like a B minus. Mm. I actually feel like overall there's more experiences that I couldn't have passed on in general than there were percentage-wise this year.
Okay.
Because I feel like I could have lived without Epic Yarn. I mean, I have lived without Epic Yarn. And by choice, unlike Greg, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, if we're putting it down to a matter of life and death, there are a lot of games we could live without.
Obviously not literally, but I mean...
Back to the necessary sequels thing again.
But... There are games from earlier periods in the system's lifespan that I really adored.
I'm just curious, like, which ones are you referencing?
Well, like the original Galaxy is a great example. I actually revere Galaxy Prime more than I do 2.
Same, I agree.
Although Galaxy 2 is a better game in pretty much every respect.
Well, Galaxy 1 did it first. I see where you're coming from.
2 is definitely better and more polished, but it can't have the impact of 1.
Right.
Of course.
So, moving on into online and digital, of course, meaning multiplayer, the online service, downloadable content and such. I'm actually going to abstain from this one because I didn't play a lot of online stuff this year. I played Art of Balance, which I loved, and it's one of my favorite games from this year overall. But I don't play a lot of WiiWare, so I don't feel like I'm informed enough to make a call on that.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, if I'm just talking about, like, the online play on the Wii, I mean, Jesus Christ, it's awful.
Yep.
It's gotta be, I mean, it's a D.
You're being kind.
It's a D minus. Like, it's
minus, it's... minus, 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 minus. All right, fine. It's an F. It's an F. It's a fucking F. There.
Like really? WeSpeak? That's your call? Like,
no, it's not, because they've stopped supporting it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Because it was a terrible fucking idea. Like, Animal Crossing is your, like, oh, this is our foray into online gaming. Go fuck yourself. Like, that would... Wii Connect 24 or whatever the fuck you want to call it is terrible. It is awful. Yeah.
For me, looking at this year alone, I mean, I think there's some bright spots. In that,
what
you
know,
you had something like Monster Hunter that was an online leveraged game.
Well, okay, Greg, Monster Hunter was good, but at the end of the day, doesn't it still feel like you're playing with someone through, you know, tin cans and a string?
Well, this is the issue. I think this year is kind of relatively a kind of bright spot for a number. First of all, I mean, WiiWare, there's a lot of balls that comes out for it, but top tier wise, there's a number of really, really good games that came out this year. Cave Story,
definitely.
Bitrip Runner, Fluidity that Johnny mentioned last week, and Yet It Moves that I brought.
Yeah, there
up
are
a few
about
months
four
ago.
Or five really standout games.
The top tier is as good as it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy your massage.
Muscle March.
Yes,
you know,
there were some
real standouts. But I mean, I think you had that, and then you had some online leverage games actually coming out. You know, people at least trying to do the best they could with stuff like Monster Hunter or Black Ops for Wii. But the problem is that it's still undermined. It's still so limited by the overall environment.
Well, I think what you see is this year there were more attempts to mine the online market with games like Monster Hunter Tri and GoldenEye.
I would say this year I'd be kind of like willing to give a decent grade for effort on the part of some people, and mainly because of the WiiWare stuff has been nice, so C- kind of range.
I guess.
Yeah, this year I graded at I also put it at a C because you do see some effort on the part of some, you know, they did pick up Fluidity, good on them. They're doing some interesting things with the Nintendo channel, you know, with the content they're putting on it. Most of it's crap, but...
I think the bigger issue, though, is that Nintendo isn't doing the online.
No.
They themselves are completely divested from the online experience.
It's like, look, Monster Hunter Tri, yeah, I guess it's online, but is it really that much better than Phantasy Star Online? No, not really. And look, yes, regular shit is better than diarrhea, but it's still shit. Look, friend codes, they're terrible. Like, you can't help but be terrible.
This is the problem. It's just the architecture from the beginning.
It's awful. I have no ill will towards Black Ops or GoldenEye. Look, they're doing the best that they can.
Or are they?
Well, they're at least, it seems like they're trying. But, you know, the fact is that when your foundation is terrible, what can you really do? And so, yeah, I can't help but say, yeah, overall, it's a D minus and maybe this year a D plus.
One of the other things that really amuses me is that when we did this back in 2007, it got some decent grades from some of us, basically because the saving grace was Virtual Console. Yeah. And, you know,
that's just gone to
what
hell.
What happened to Virtual Console, guys?
Well, that's not exclusive to this year, though.
Exactly. I mean,
oh, no.
Look, I got Ogre Battle 64 this year, so as far as I'm concerned, Virtual Console was an A+.
I mean, it's, you know, that well's been dry for about 2 years outside of Japan. So that, you know, over the life cycle counts against it. This year it counts against it.
I got the one game I thought I was never going to get. So I can't give it anything but an A+ for the Virtual Console because it's the only game I intended to buy from the very start.
I think generally everything has to be looked through the prism of the fact that the architecture doesn't work. Yeah, Wii Connect 24 was horseshit. That nothing ever materialized out of that.
Well, you know, I mean, Wii Connect 24 does serve an important role, though, and most of it's back-end stuff that we don't see. However...
Well, I mean, it lets you know when you have an update you can download. Like, it can't even update the system by itself.
When was the last time we had an update that was actually productive... Rather than,
you know, killing hacking?
Yeah, getting rid of homebrew.
No, I mean, there's more than that, though. I mean, now it gives Nintendo the ability to make my room blink fucking blue in the middle of the night when they have it. I think there's something I should see on the Nintendo channel.
Yeah, but, like, have we received an update that's anywhere close to being as much of a game changer as NXE?
Oh,
yes,
no way.
We have, yes, the SD card.
Well, the SD card is a big deal.
Whatever.
That's
but,
great.
But, I mean, the thing with the SD card is that it's one of these things that's like, you shouldn't have been in there from day one.
It should have been, but it did really change the Wii experience if you download a lot of games.
Yeah.
And see, I don't because there aren't that many good things to download. So it didn't...
Hey, if you're big into Virtual Console like me, and you buy some of the bigger WiiWare games as
well. True, yeah. There's some, you know, hefty N64 games sitting on there, but...
And like, so a lot of WiiWare games are pretty big, you know, in terms of put you 200, 300 blocks.
And what's with having a block... You know, like, God.
Just give it to me in bytes. Something that I can understand.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, because the average person doesn't understand bytes either, so blocks makes more sense to them.
James, I think we're at the point where people understand bytes.
No, trust me. I work with the general public. You're wrong. Take my word for it.
I think the other fundamental failure that you have to look at over the life cycle is the way that the games are presented to you for digital download. You know, the shop channel and stuff.
We
and the,
just
you know,
got demos.
Well, we just got demos back.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
They were barely there in the first place. Goodness knows how long it will last. It's so poor, even to the point that Iwata himself has conceded how bad it was.
Well, and you know that they use a rating system now to determine what demos are going to stay on there for the Wii. So, like, if the game gets a good enough rating, it's allowed to stay up there as a demo.
And I mean, I think another thing that just, you know, with the friend code stuff that really highlights how kind of bad it is, you know, because it's game specific and all that, you know, obviously, you know, let's say something like GoldenEye, people might be willing to sort of take the time to swap codes and do what it takes to play something like that. But I think, and we had an email on this, you know, when you go to something like, say, Pac-Man Championship Edition DX, which I've got for the PSN, you know, you would have to trade friend codes on Wii just to see your friend's scores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and people just aren't going to do that to see each other's scores. You know, but then that takes out, like, a really important part of what makes a game like that so kind of involving. Like, we've heard Johnny stories about Geometry Wars 2. You know, someone beats his score, and then, like, he wants to go back and surpass them, and it goes back and forth. That is not going to happen if you just have to exchange a 12-digit code to see each other's scores. It's just...
Well, and the thing is, a lot of these online friends, you don't keep up with at, you know, the same pace you do with your, you know, real-life friends. I'm not going to check every single person, hey, did you get this game? Hey, did you get this game? I'm just not going to go through it. And I don't have as many friends on the Wii, but imagine if I did.
But we have had games in the past that just ran off the Wii's friend code system, correct?
I don't know, but you take something like Sin and Punishment 2. That's got, you know, high score, online high score tables, but there is no connection to your Wii system number, and there's no individual friend code. So basically, the only way you're going to see your friend's one is if you're around their house and they show you or send you a screen cap
of it. Or they happen to have an inordinately high score. At which point you should just not try to pass them anyway.
Or they're just coincidentally right next to you. You know, just the fact that Sin and Punishment 2, right, they're a retail game, does not have that kind of functionality, shows you that, you know, for some of these WiiWare games, you know, the WiiWare would seem like it's very well suited to, you know, high scores and stuff. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible. What I am saying, though, is that clearly it's not easy enough that a lot of these kinds of games are just not are not appearing on the format. And that goes back to the fundamental architecture just being faulty. So, I mean, for me, I'm really skirting with giving it an F on the life cycle, but I probably would go D. I think it'll scrape a D minus.
You know what? I would be tempted to give it an F, but when you look at Virtual Console, it's actually pretty awesome. Overall,
the accumulation.
Yeah.
In Japan, it's nearly 600 games. That's, you know, that they're nearly to 600. I think, I mean, are they even to 400 in the US yet? I can't remember. But
no, and obviously it's worse in other territories, but it's still fantastic. You can still go get a ton of games that you may not have ever played or that you love from your childhood, and they're there at your fingertips.
Yeah. Sure. No, I would get more points. You'd get more points with me, though, if the interface and all that kind of stuff was better presented, so that I'm not like looking at Wikipedia lists to decide what I'm going to buy on the Virtual Console.
Oh yeah.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and Nate? What was your overall?
I would give it a D minus.
And James?
I F'd it for the life cycle, and then I C'd it for this year.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into fan service, responsiveness to complaints and demands of quote unquote heavy users, including provisions of the new games in beloved franchises. I mean, just based on this year, I got to give them an A.
Yeah.
There's kind of multiple facets to this, isn't there? I mean, in terms of this year, they've done a number of things that are positive, like bringing the demos back for WiiWare is the kind of thing that heavy Wii users want to see. They've given you established franchises like DKC, Galaxy 2, Metroid Other M, you know, and even, you know, beyond that. I mean, just look at the D3 presentation this year. You know, what do they have up there? Mario, Metroid, Zelda, Donkey Kong, GoldenEye, you know, even though it's not their game. Like, I mean, this year they really kind of tilted back around to fan service.
Although I would still put it at a B because I don't know if this is childish of me, just because we still don't actually have Zelda. And I want it.
Well, you know.
I think it should be here by now.
It's nice to want it.
Oh, I don't know why you think that.
Yeah, dude, it did not look ready at E3. Like, it really didn't look ready at E3.
I'm not talking about in terms of with relation to how the game's actually progressing. I mean, should we have a Zelda by now that's Wii exclusive? Yeah, we should have.
But the curious thing, though, as well, is that they're lying about, well, everything's done apart from the visual.
Well, yeah, clearly that's not the case.
I wanted to just hit somebody at that point. I'm like, that doesn't make sense at all.
I mean, you know what, Nate? I mean, I kind of feel similar. I do feel like that's, you know, they're missing a little something there with Zelda. And again, maybe it's a little concentrated in certain areas with the side scrollers and stuff. So for this year, I'd go with B+. Over the life cycle, I don't think it's such a rosy picture, personally.
No.
Because there's a few things. First of all, you had the dry spells, you know, and that you've had certain franchises that I think have been, you know, I still don't understand why there isn't an original Pikmin yet.
That's ridiculous.
It's difficult to make a game that is, you know, they've not made so many of these before.
It's just you have the Wii Remote interface seems well suited to it. Everyone that's played the new Play Control versions seems to think so. But obviously, yeah, you could do more from a design point of view, building a Pikmin game from the ground up.
Those were the first. You know, Pikmin was one of the first things everyone thought of. Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. And then you've got, I mean, for me personally, stuff like F-Zero and Star Fox, whether it's that great a fit for the Wii or not, I've wanted to see it. It's
like,
not here.
Why, instead of making all these, like, instead of making all these other games, instead of making all the pixel junk crap, like, why hasn't Q Games been given Star Fox to make on the Wii? It's ridiculous.
Probably production staff.
Yeah, but I mean, you think Nintendo could, you know, be a joint venture.
Exactly.
Kind of deal.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they built Sakurai a development team from scratch. They can do it for Star Fox.
Although Brawl was always going to sell a shitload of units.
Its predecessor is still the top-selling GameCube game.
Even so, like you would think that for a game that it's a no-brainer to make on the Wii.
But you know, the last few Star Fox games have not really endeared themselves with the fan base either.
Well, so Command was pretty good.
But doesn't that kind of lend itself, kind of like DKC Returns is in a way?
Star Fox Returns, make it retro.
Where you just like pretend that everything that your Halloween H2O this shit is what I'm saying, and you pretend that all these other stuff didn't happen.
You just ruined gaming for years now.
I know.
Well, and look, I'll sit here and say that I enjoyed Assault. I've said it before.
The flying missions in Assault were actually pretty good.
Yeah, I like the flying and I like the multiplayer.
Well, the multiplayer, I don't know about that, but the flying stuff I really liked a lot in Assault.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that the game as a whole is bad. It's that they basically made a game and then said, what do people like about the Star Fox series? Let's not give them that.
Yeah, totally.
Let's give them something
else. That's what I'm talking about, is just, you know, taking it really back to its roots. Like, yeah, I mean, DKC Returns is, you know, I mean, God.
Well, I think, you know, making the 3DS version for Star Fox 64, I think that's kind of going to be their barometer to see if people are still interested in it, and then hopefully if they are, they'll make another one.
For me, this category has to get an A this year, because, I mean, we had...
Oh, yeah.
You saying how responsive are they? They imported Sin and Punishment. Was it last year?
Well, Sin and Punishment, the virtual console, was 2007.
Okay, in 2007, excuse me. And then they said, oh, wow, there really is a demand for this game in the West. Let's make a game. Let's go and make a Sin and Punishment game. Let's ask Treasure to make the first sequel they've made.
Well, they've done other sequels.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there's Punch-Out. Like, that's kind of like a similar thing where...
Yeah.
That wasn't this year. That was last year, but
no,
still.
That was not this year.
But, I mean, in terms of the life cycle, I mean, it's very pertinent, and Sin and Punishment 2 is this year. Sin and Punishment 2 is so weird because it's... You know, that is a tiny section of the Nintendo fan base that gives a shit about
that. They went, we are going to placate you.
I am thrilled they did it. I don't think we are living in some bizarre upside down world where you can't get a new Star Fox, but you can get a new Sin of Punishment. But...
And I mean, they were ridiculously responsive at this E3. I mean,
yes.
There's the Penny Arcade recap of the E3, which is basically just them rattling off things they have.
Totally,
which includes the phrase, new Zelda, new GoldenEye, new Kirby, new Metroid, new Kid Icarus, new 3D shit, no glasses. And then it goes on to say that Santa Claus is performing sexual acts in their booth. That was almost masturbatory when they were up on stage.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah. It's like...
It was like, look how much we love ourselves. Look what we're giving you.
Exactly. Hey, you remember us? We're Nintendo. Here's all of our shit.
And Galaxy had already come out this year, so it wasn't there, but it came out this year, too.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, they pretty much get a perfect score in terms of responsiveness to what their core fans want, because they basically included sex in every box.
I mean, this year, I mean, they did go pretty mental with it. Over the course of the system's life, I think there's a few other things. I mean, first of all, I mean, stuff like the whole SD card thing, the fact that, I mean, they did respond with that. They did provide a fix, but, you know, 3 years late, pretty much, you know, so they get sort of taken down a peg for things like that. The file size limits, you know, I'm sure they could have done something to be progressive on that they're just not getting into, even though you know, you hear developers complain about it, you hear fans complain about it. You've got the situation with Super Meat Boy where that is, seems to be in limbo now because they just can't get it down to 40. That kind of stuff, they seem very much out of touch in those kinds of areas, which, you know, have not really been so manifest in this year when you've got that the tidal wave of fan service games. But I think over the life cycle, I wouldn't go above a C.
I'm going to give them a C+ overall, but again, for this year, I got to give them an A. What about you, Nate?
Overall, I give a C, and this year, a B+.
And James, what were yours again?
I only went so far as this year, where I said I basically give them a perfect score.
And then what about overall?
But overall, I do think they're better than a C. I think they're like a B, because in general, they gave more on the Wii than they did on the GameCube in terms of their core franchises. I mean, they just did.
Think about how many core franchises
didn't get GameCube titles that got Wii titles. I mean, what did we get for Kirby? We got a game where you press A to win. That was its GameCube manifest. What did we get for Donkey Kong? We got Donkey Kong.
You got Jungle Beat. Jungle Beat's brilliant.
Whoa. Step the fuck
back.
Fine,
but it came out at the end of the system's life.
That doesn't make a difference.
These games are coming out at the end of the Wii.
It does make a difference. It does.
Yeah, dude, come on.
They didn't give it the same push they gave this game.
You can make that the best Donkey Kong game on GameCube was better than the one on Wii. Wind Waker was better than Twilight Princess. Okay, maybe, yeah, Sunshine was not better than Galaxy, obviously.
No, and then we got another one.
Yeah, the two Galaxies. And
fine,
the Mario
I'll concede on that point. We got two Pikmins.
I think you have to at least give it a B. It's inconceivable that it would get anything less, because there are so many core franchise titles that are clearly catered to their fan base.
I guess so. I don't know.
I think what colors our perception is they came out with so many things that weren't catered to their fan base.
Yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed a lot of that stuff. I mean, you know, Wii Sports Resort.
Wii Music.
Not so much, but, you know, I mean, there's been a number of things, and some of this, you know, spills over to the DS, which is outside of the remit here, but, you know, stuff that I didn't know I wanted to play that ultimately I've enjoyed. I mean, I'm not going to begrudge them one bit.
I feel like they've pushed all the buttons they're supposed to have pushed, just maybe not in the right order.
All right, well, let's move on into business management. This, of course, includes marketing, pricing, bundles, messaging, and E3 presentations, etc. So, okay, I mean, here's the thing. If I'm thinking about Wii marketing this year, I don't really think anything pops up. Maybe like the special anniversary edition, the red Wii with the...
Yeah, well, they've done... I mean, this is the year where, you know, remember when people would say to Reggie about price cuts or will you do this, will you do that? And he'd just say, we haven't even done different colors yet.
Yeah.
This is the year where it's like colors, wacky bundles, they've moved into a different stage of the life cycle this year.
And you know what? He said we haven't done different colors yet, and that red Wii is not staying in stock.
Yeah, it's moving units. I mean, you know, the black Wii was earlier, that sort of debuted in Japan, you know, last year and stuff, but they have moved into this stage now where they feel like to really, you know, move the needle on the units as much as they can, and even still that they're down significantly on last year, they've had to try and add value, like Wii Fit getting bundled in.
Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah, Wii Sports Resort getting bundled in. Yeah, Wii Remote Plus getting bundled in with stuff. I mean, they are now going to a point where, remember when the big thing about Wii was that it was one SKU and it was simple? And that was, yeah, everyone wanted that one product. It's all over the place now. So, I mean, this is a very different year for them.
Right.
Well, I think if we're going to discuss the company as a whole and not just their North American divisions, they've experimented with bundling much more so in Japan. And I think we're probably due for that soon.
I think because in Japan, they're ahead of the curve relative to us, I think.
Right. And I think that's what we're going to start seeing next year. Because right now, there's like 5 special edition Wii bundles with games. And I think every console generation, they've done that. And they've somewhat resisted this time.
Yeah, I mean, GameCube got pretty wacky pretty early with the amount of stuff, like Crystal Chronicles GameCube that was white and all. I mean...
Right. And my N64 came with Star Wars Podracer.
Yeah, I remember that bundle. Yeah.
That was a cool bundle. It had a cool box.
I actually really like that game.
I love it.
It is a good game.
Yeah.
And the box it came in was awesome.
I remember that box.
I played as Clegg Holdfast, I believe.
But, they've started doing that. They did that for both of their big RPGs this year. They did that for a couple other games this year, and I think we'll probably start seeing that in Western territories.
But of course,
next year,
what they've done there is they've gone with that strategy rather than dropping the price further from where they dropped it last year. So, I mean, one of the questions in terms of grading this category is, is that the right decision?
Well, I mean, the question really then becomes, do they need to continue to sell units at the rate they were selling them? Because right now, it's physically impossible. The other two systems will catch them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is mathematically, physically impossible.
But they're looking at their own revenue.
Right.
I mean, but can they kind of coast for a couple of years and just be like, eh, whatever. We just got to keep it in this general ballpark.
Well, this is where you can't look at Nintendo's console business in a vacuum, because they do get a lot of revenue from handhelds, and the 3DS is coming. And
They coasted for a generation and a half from the N64 to the GameCube. So, I mean...
Yeah, I'm not sure how entirely voluntary that was.
No, but I mean, it's not like they'll be killed if they have to coast for a couple
years.
No,
they won't
be
killed, but what I'm saying is, do you think this bundling and colors and all that, is that a sustainable strategy, for instance?
Well, look, the name of this section is business management, so you have to think of it from the perspective not of a Nintendo Wii gamer, but of a Nintendo stockholder. And if I'm a Nintendo stockholder, I am extremely happy, not only from this year, but of the entire life cycle.
Oh, life cycle, you have to be fucking late.
Yeah. That's right. You basically have to start naming your children after Iwata's
this year,
names.
They had a little bit of a dip, I think, earlier in the year in their stock price in NTDOI.
I think, you know, the fact that they had to come out and ultimately say 3DS isn't coming out this year anywhere had a significant part to play.
They suffered a little bit of a setback there, but overall it's been really, really resilient. And I mean, yeah, this is not, I'm not looking at this as a gamer. I'm looking at this as someone who owns Nintendo stock, and I'm super fucking happy.
Well, I mean, you just have to look at where it was 6 years ago and where it is now.
They've made a spectacular upward spiral.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, this kind of phase that they're going into now is a little different, because, you know, you've got the HD consoles impinging on the motion space, or how much of a concern you consider that is debatable.
Well, I think it applies to the 360. I don't think it applies at all to Move.
No, because the Move is dead on the vine.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, you just look at PS3's performance in terms of console sold.
It's also in trouble.
It was nowhere near. I mean, one of the interesting things I thought, looking at this year's hardware sales overall, was obviously 360 was looking to get a bump at Kinect, but it got a very big bump out of the, you know, pretty modest revision to the hardware of the new slim model.
Yeah, but it looks so much nicer.
Have you guys used the new 360?
I haven't.
I used one at E3.
I actually played one recently, and it's actually really nice. It's a lot slimmer. It looks a lot more appealing, and it runs so much quieter.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot overstate that enough. My 360 is fucking loud. Like, yeah. It's loud. It runs really hot. I had, like, the first revision 360, the one where where it can still melt on occasion. And, I mean, yeah, the new 360 is, like, leaps and bounds better than it.
Well, you wonder whether Nintendo are thinking to themselves, you know, the problem is with Wii, it's tough to do it because it's such a kind of reduced form console.
Well, no, I wouldn't expect them to, because
they've got to be thinking, is this something we can do just like cosmetically, or some sort of new feature that's relatively trivial but could just bump it up? And so far they've gone with the bundle idea.
Yeah, I don't think redesigning the hardware is a smart decision, because it's so minimalist and it's so small already.
There's so little to change, isn't there? But I mean,
yeah,
you could make it circular.
I think at some point you'd have a hard time fitting all the ports on the damn thing.
Oh, I could get rid of those USBs. Don't need Wii Speak anyway.
When we were discussing colors earlier, I was going to say this, but the conversation kind of went in a different direction. I remember back in 2000, I think, it was a while ago, they did the translucent N64 colors.
The iMac colors.
They saw their biggest sales bump, and a sustained sales bump, that they had seen since the system launched.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten two colors so far, black and red, and the red is a special edition.
Yeah.
They can milk the colors for a while. I mean, you look at what they did in Japan with the DS. Every time they came out with a color, they'd sell another million units.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure there's thousands upon thousands of DSs stacked up in Japanese homes.
Well, I mean, on that topic there, do you think that they haven't been aggressive enough with this kind of, you know, special edition?
I'm not sure they've needed to.
Yeah, that's the thing. It hasn't really been a necessity. I think that especially in those first 2 years, they were going to sell it whatever.
Look, there's no question about, I think the life cycle, on balance, you can't have any real significant complaints in this area. But this year, you know, basically since you had the new 360, they've been second place every month in the American MPDs. Yeah. And, you know, is there any way that that could have been avoided, I guess is what I'm saying.
Probably not, actually.
They've already sold so many. I mean, it's only...
And I think there was a certain pent-up demand for the 360 anyway.
I think that the 360 really reached total mass market saturation this year. Whereas the Wii, it's sort of been there since the beginning. So where did it really have to go?
Well, I think the biggest thing really in the end, I mean, they're dabbling with these SKUs and stuff. And that definitely, as James has kind of said, it can have an effect. Although it's more difficult when you've already sold as many as they have. But really, it would come down to software, you know, the next kind of Wii Fit type of thing. And to be fair, New Super Mario Bros. Was kind of like that.
Yeah.
If you look at that, well, that sold in Japan. It's one of the best-selling games in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was stupid.
They hit that, but this year, they had the kind of piggybacking with DKC and Kirby and just like add co-op to it, you know, kind of approach.
I think in Europe, they probably handled it better this year. The order, maybe you could discuss what was the correct order for releasing them, but I think the decision to release DKC that far from Kirby was a good decision, because I think they were just too close together in Western markets. And to be honest, there was almost no advertising for Epic Yarn whatsoever.
I think I saw some, but I didn't see a lot, no.
Versus DKC, which has gotten a fair amount of advertising, at least.
Well, I suppose on the subject of advertising, of course, this is where our regional disparity comes into play. I am seeing in Europe far, far more Nintendo ads than I have ever seen before. It's like someone just upgraded their budget and they went silly with it. And I guess because I watch a certain amount of TV that is watched by the money demo, you know, basically like a lot of NFL stuff, which is, you know, the audience for that in this country is, you know, men of my age, you know, that kind of thing with disposable income. I'm just getting sick of it. I am getting so damn sick of seeing that little Wii flash up and then Wii Party, Wii Fit.
Well, they sometimes they'll go a little nuts on advertising sprees. When they had the Dragon Quest IX promo spots with Seth Green, they probably went a little overboard with it, just a smidge. Where I was seeing like two ads in the series in the same commercial break. And my first thought was, I really don't want to play Dragon Quest IX. Now my second thought was, I want to kill Seth Green.
They were playing those ads in theaters.
Yes, they went.
It was crazy.
They went overboard. Yeah. But then they did. Then you came around to like Galaxy 2, which got very little advertisement.
Yeah.
And then you had DKC, which has gotten guys in gorilla suits doing advertisements, versus Kirby, which got no advertisements, versus Sin and Punishment, which there actually were some ads for some reason. That I'll never understand.
I saw an ad for Sin and Punishment before I saw, I think, Scott Pilgrim.
I saw an ad for Sin and Punishment, and I almost died. Like, my heart stopped for a minute.
One thing I would say, probably looking back at the life cycle, if there's a blemish, it's something that we discussed when we did the 2007 report card, which is there has been, I think more so in the past, a problem of different messages to different groups within the big overall Wii user base. They haven't been able to differentiate marketing as well as they probably should have done, you know, certain games. They just haven't been able to. Sometimes you could say, you know, it isn't for lack of trying. For instance, you know, some like Other M, it seems like they tried with the marketing push with that, but they haven't got a lot of success. But maybe the seeds for that were sown earlier in the life cycle with Prime 3 and other games, or certainly even other E3s where they kind of gave the impression that they weren't really interested in certain kinds of players, and therefore maybe people who might have listened to an appeal to buy Other M just basically turned their ears deaf to the Wii altogether. So I think that's probably one area where I would probably, on the life cycle, I think I'd probably have to go an A overall for this area. And then maybe for this year, I'm a little unsure of some of the moves they made, so maybe a B+. But that would be, I think, their biggest failing in this time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so yeah. So overall, I'd say, you know, I got to give them an A, and A+, honestly, for the whole life cycle, for their, as far as their marketing goes. And then maybe maybe for this year, a B, maybe a B plus. I don't have any real concerns or any real complaints as far as their business strategy goes. But I suppose I haven't really been wowed by it either.
I'd also agree with you, Carl. I think this year is especially funny because they have these great titles and they're not really doing that great of a job pushing the really stellar ones. You know, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. Mario and Kirby. They made them; they're great games, but I just don't see them getting the covers that even Dragon Quest got.
And what about you, James?
For the lifetime, and I think this is why I have to give it an A, they did a very good job doing three things. One, they explained what the Wii could do. Two, they managed to, in a visual medium, sell games that visually look greatly inferior to their counterparts in the same industry.
And sell well.
And three, yeah. They managed to go into the public relations space and create a sort of hype engine that was self-feeding that they no longer had to keep money into once it got going. And by doing those things, they A-plused it. But this year, they dropped the ball heavily. Their advertising has been spotty. The quality of their ads, if you go back to the early 2000s, they had these big expensive ads that were kind of confusing, and mm-hmm. they didn't really always convey the message. So, like, you had the infamous Golden Sun Opera ad, mm-hmm. of which nothing in it is in the game.
It's in Golden Sun 3, actually.
Yeah, it is, for some
it's a
reason.
Summon.
then they had the Metroid Prime ads, which, while they were visually interesting, they were just the person basically walking in a corridor.
Mm.
And we've kind of gone back to those kinds of ads, like with the new Donkey Kong Country Returns ad, which is a guy in a field with guys in gorilla suits playing the game.
Yeah.
It's doesn't have the same polish their previous ads
in
had.
In Europe, they're a lot more committed to still having people on the sofa locking back.
Yeah, we have.
They're still committed to that. Whether you like that or not, they're very much committed, except now there's a lot more celebrities doing
that. We had that phase a couple of years ago. Now we have the fully acted, latent in the unwound future ad that would make anyone who has a legitimate English accent deeply offended.
Well, I think I need to look this up.
It's pretty awful. It's basically like telling of a newsboy reading out the newspaper on the street corner while a guy that looks nothing like the professor walks around.
So you think this could be just because they're too flush with cash? I mean, it's just that, you know, they've started spending.
They've hired Michael Bay to make their ads. Is that what you're saying? Well, Big Ben doesn't blow up, so probably not.
So what are you going for this year then?
I'm going to say C, actually, because I think they let a lot of. I mean, they hit games that had mass market appeal, but they didn't do anything with really a lot of the Wii games. They went heavy on the DS in retrospect.
All right. Well, are we ready to move into overall?
Yep.
Well, overall, I mean, I don't know. I think I said a lot of things about the Wii, what I liked and what I didn't like, so I don't feel like I need to restate those things. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that overall for this year, I think they had a really strong year. I think they had a lot of really strong first-party software and actually some decent third-party offerings like No More Heroes, which is, again, my game of the year. So I'd say for this year, I got to give them a solid B, maybe a B-minus, just because, you know, I could use for a little bit more. But and then overall, unfortunately, I'd have to go with maybe a C, possibly a C+. Like I said earlier, I think that the Wii is a fantastic secondary console. It pairs really well with my 360, but I wouldn't want to just be a Wii owner. And in that regard, so I kind of have to give them a lower score for that. What about you, Nate?
Yeah, for this year, probably a B+. You know, I think there were some really standout titles. I enjoyed Monster Hunter. I loved Galaxy 2. And, you know, it's not the only console I own. So, you know, just from my point of view, I was happy. Overall, I would have to go C- over the course of its life. You know, there are very few games on the Wii, like we were saying earlier, that I couldn't live without. Probably only a handful. And when it comes down to it, it's the games. I'm not averaging, you know, marketing or anything like that into it.
Yeah. This is more of a personal thing.
Right, exactly, which is why I'd have to go with the C-. You know, like, I couldn't just own a Wii. Definitely not.
All right. Well, what about you, Greg?
For me, I'd have to say this year, I'd give it an A. But on a personal basis, the thing is that the stuff that they brought out isn't all things to all people, but it's a lot of things to me.
You got Sin and Punishment.
If you're going to count Sin and Punishment, that is awesome. Galaxy 2. I mean, those are two of my favorite games ever, full stop, in the same year. DKC, loved it. Really challenging. You know, so this year's been really, really great. I have very few complaints about it whatsoever on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the system's life cycle as a whole, I would go pretty high. I think I would give it a B because, you know, it's definitely, you know, the virtual console stuff has satisfied me a great deal. You know, the return to, which, you know, has happened more sort of later on in the console's life cycle, but the return to more classic gameplay styles, you know, Punch-Out, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, those are the kinds of games I like to play. So between Virtual Console and that movement of new games, it's been great. And most of the sort of deficiencies are things that don't really affect me directly. And I also have a PS3 now. I did eventually get one, you know, at the back end of 2009, which, you know, I've been able to enjoy, you know, some kinds of games that I haven't been enjoying before on the Wii. But with the two alongside each other, the Wii is still very much more than held its own for my playtime. So that's how I'd split it. A for this year, B for the life cycle.
And what about you, James?
I'm just going to do this like I do when I come up with a review score for the game and just gut feeling it at the end.
Yeah, that's pretty much it with this.
I'm just going to do two Bs.
Okay, great. Well, folks, I think that's the Wii report card. So I'm going to hand it back over to Greg.
That is the Wii report card for this year for the life cycle. I hope you enjoyed a little weird bit of nostalgia for people who have been listening to the show for more than 3 years. I suppose it's only fitting, really, that if we are a Nintendo-centric podcast, we should eventually dip into the kind of shameless, nostalgic trading that they have very much nuzzled into recently. But yeah, that is going to do it for this episode. Next week, if all things go to plan, we should be looking at The World Ends With You retroactive being wrapped up. That'll be the last episode of this year, believe it or not, that goes out this year. This episode's the last one before the holidays. So I suppose I should say a season's greetings to everyone.
Happy Christmas, as they would say in the UK, right?
Happy Christmas is an accepted form. So I hope everyone has a lovely holiday season. Guess what they wanted. Thanks to Carl, of course,
for having me.
Coming back and hosting that segment. And to Nathan for going back-to-back days on podcast recording.
Always a treat.
You already had a big one last night with the newscast, which people should be able to listen to around about the same time as this one's going up. Yeah, but
still a little sore, but I made it through.
I definitely wanted to have Nathan on because he couldn't make it to the live show, unlike his newscast compatriots.
And I cried about it too, so yeah.
So I'm glad I made up for that. And James, thanks for being a warrior playing hurt.
Yeah, I'm more a man than Favre is, apparently.
Oh yeah, well I can't believe we got this far and haven't mentioned.
I just had a feeling.
The Bills ended the streak. We did it. That's going to be in history forever. It's probably his last play. He's going to be an interception.
I just had a feeling, and I just kind of tried to squeeze it in there.
So, yeah, before we say goodbye, first of all, more listener mail will be required in subsequent episodes, so you can send those over to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We also would like you to rate and review on iTunes if you can. And Carl, it's probably about time for you to get into the Crosstalk stuff.
You can, of course, check out all of our great alternative podcasts on crosstalk.com. And I say ours because it really has become sort of a sister site to Nintendo World Report. Can we just confirm that for a little bit?
I might have to make an editorial review of the content before we authorize such a statement.
All right, look, yeah, you got all the RFN alums on the movie podcast at crosstalk.com, Box Office Poison, plus your usual host of Jonathan Metz. All right, we've got Johnny Metz's own Discovery Music Project. Speaking of, the newscast, Andy Gergen was on it, and actually, a new episode of DMP is coming out on Tuesday, starring Nathan Mustafa.
It's true.
They're talking about Umphrey's McGee, so check it out. And then there's just tons of really cool stuff on crosstalk.com. We got a comics podcast. We got a video podcast about musicals. It's weird. So check it out.
That's the one I've avoided, by the way.
Yeah, it's fine. But, one last thing. Right after we're done with this, I'm going to go see Tron Legacy. But after that, when I get home, I'm going to be editing the brand new episode of Rough Draft, the Beer Appreciation Show. That's going to be up by the time you're hearing this. And I strongly recommend that you go hear it. Because it is awesome. If you want to hear me get drunk on mic, then you can do that. So there's Rough Draft.
Well, with an invitation like that, how can anyone refuse?
How can you refuse? So remember, it's crosstalk.com. That's crosstalk.com.
And of course, there is our other sister podcast, Michael TYP Cole's Radio Trivia Podcast Edition. Always have to check that out. I think a new episode is currently in production, but the most recent episode with Zach Miller, you can download now. Lots of fan requests on that one. They're always worth checking that out for great video game music, and that is going to do it. So thanks to everyone, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
See you around, folks.
I'm sorry, I just thought about what an Oops Pants Party game would be like, and it's amazing.